And one of the other reasons why we tend to overlook this is because, especially when we start to earn more money. When yes. you're earning more money, you tend to look at things like insurance as more affordable
right.
because you've earned more money. But you don't really think about how you might be able to optimize your overall income or maximize your net income by still continuing to push, right? It's like, it's a psychological effect there. Like, you're making more money, you just kind of see like, oh, I can afford to do these things now, or insurance doesn't eat up as much as my as much of the share of my income anymore. And so you start to ignore it. But I would encourage you to spend a couple hours every single year. You don't have to obsess about it,
right.
but dig into it, ask for some new quotes, call up your providers, see what they can do to bring that number down, because I'm telling you, you're likely leaving a lot of money on the table. Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast, presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Julian.
And I'm Kirsten, and today we're talking about small habits or changes that can lead to big impacts.
Yeah, shout out to all the new year, new me, New Year's Eve, yeah. personal development, self-improvement people yeah. out there. This one's for you. I'm ready
yeah,
for it.
Yeah, and since it's the last day of the month, I feel like, you know, if you're one of those people who started the month with grand ambitions and big goals and maybe the month humbled you a little bit, this episode is for you. We're going to talk about some small things that may still get you the same result that you're looking for, but don't require nearly as much overhaul or yeah. lifestyle change.
Team lower the bar.
Team lower the bar. Low bar lifestyle. So really, what we want to talk about today and hone in on are habits, because habits seem to be all the rage. And every time I hear that word, it makes me think of a joke one of my old teachers told me. Are you ready for it? Are you ready for me to be funny?
This better be funny, man. I can't take it.
Why do nuns always wear black and white?
I don't know.
I don't know either. It's just a habit they have. That's funny. What? That's funny.
That's literally not a joke.
Whatever.
That's literally not a joke.
Anyway.
You don't just get to call things jokes.
That's a joke.
Okay.
You know, it's a habit. What okay. nuns wear, it's
called a habit. What's a habit? These terrible jokes.
Anyway,
you force our listeners
I am excited about this topic because habits have had a big year. I don't know if you guys are familiar with James Clear, but he is the author of the book Atomic Habits, which was published in 2018. But last year in 2021, it outsold every book in every category on Amazon.
Wow.
It was the number one book across all topics. Even in a pandemic. So clearly habits are top of mind for a lot of people. And it makes sense after 2 years of living like we've lived, you know. People have just found themselves with like a new set of habits. And some maybe, you know, they may be prouder of than others. But his book basically gives you a framework on how you can improve every single day.
Yeah.
And like build nice habits. But the funny thing is, I actually feel like I know an outsized number of people who are already creatures of habits. Okay. So like for a book to be this big, to be the number one seller on Amazon, I feel like surely I would know lots of people who have personally read it and would recommend it. But honestly, I don't.
Yeah.
Probably because creatures of habits don't really need to read books about habits. I actually consider you to be a creature of habit. Do you consider yourself to be one?
Well, first of all, I don't consider myself to be a creature of anything.
It's a figure of speech.
Yeah, I know. But like, you know, I don't vibe with the label creature very much. nor do I consider myself to be a creature of habit. I think I prefer the term routine.
Okay.
And I know habits are like all the rage right now. Like I've seen the book. I don't even know if I've read the book. Like maybe I have. I feel like I've been given the book or a similar book. Maybe it was entitled Habits, but like
there's definitely been habit books.
Yeah.
You've read a version.
Yeah, I've read a version of a book. I don't believe it's that one though. But I've never really been drawn to the term habits. And I was thinking about why. And I think a lot of it is because my work ethic was forged in the kitchen. Mm. So for many of our listeners out there, if you don't know, maybe you do. And if you can't tell, because I make a lot of food references to just about everything. But it's because my first career and my first love was really like food. And I used to be a professional chef. And so a lot of my work ethic was forged in the kitchen. And the foundation for kitchen hierarchy, like the idea of like the chef at the head and the sous chefs below him, that entire brigade, and even the term brigade is rooted in the military and them having strict routines. And so routines were really all about like, this is what you do. You wake up, you do this thing at this time, like producing crystal clear, predictable outcomes. So a lot of that is sort of baked into who I am at a very early age. And so the word habit was typically something that would lead to a distorted result or a missed target or an undesirable result. So it was like having a bad habit of like underpreparing for a shift, and then you threw off the entire operation, or like overcooking a steak. So for me, habits were typically cured by building stronger or newer routines. But over the years, when I left that career behind and then got into more management and marketing, that's when I really started to have a greater appreciation for what habits represented in people's lives, and actually find it to be a really intriguing subject. And obviously there's great correlation between habits and our financial lives. And so that's why we're talking about it today.
Yeah. I'm definitely the person who reads books about habits. Because I feel like my bad habits are stronger than my good ones. And this could just be my own bias, but I feel like I have no problem creating good new habits, but they don't stick around nearly as long as the bad ones. But luckily,
so then they're not habits.
Right. So
it's not how habits work.
So luckily, after years and years of internal work, I understand what this is, and it's just lingering perfectionism that prevents me from sticking to the good habits. So last year I actually challenged myself to build and stick to these better habits, even if they weren't perfect. And it was a game changer for me. So I figured we'd share a few of the financial habits we've established that have had the biggest impact towards our goals.
Let's do it.
All right. You want to kick us off?
I will. So the first one that I would say.
You can say routine if that's easier for you.
No, I'm going to be consistent.
All right.
I'm going to try. I might stumble, but you can correct me. So the first one, I think, and you know, I alluded to the idea of, you know, me having a previous career as a chef. And I think one of the things that is also baked into who I am is the idea of mise en place. And so if you are a chef or if you know a chef, tell them that you know what mise en place is, and they're going to look at you with great respect because you understand. It's almost like a way of life.
Yeah.
Mise en place. It's this idea of envisioning what you're going to prepare, the outcome that you're looking for, and making sure that you have everything that you need ahead of time so that when it's time to cook, you don't you are just clicking on all cylinders. So for example, I made some gumbo the other day, and it's not like I started making the roux and then while I was making the roux, I started chopping up like the Trinity and doing all those other things. You front loaded all of the prep. So I've got my flour, I've got my oil, I've got my shellfish, all of the ingredients all ready to go so that when it's time to cook, it's all right there. And I don't really have to think about it. I don't miss out on a step and I end up with a result that I'm looking for. And so that is very much an idea that comes naturally to anyone who has cooked. And I'm sure it's relevant to other professions, but this is one that I'm more familiar with. And so this is an idea or a habit that I'm referring to. And the way that manifests itself in our financial life, I think this is also convenient given the time that we're in, but I think for sure is tax season. Like tax season is horrible. Like most people hate tax season, especially if you're an entrepreneur, especially if you're a disorganized entrepreneur. Like you despise this season. It is a season of stress, but it's something that I think could be alleviated, whether you're an entrepreneur or a W-2 worker. It doesn't really matter. And so when you think about getting your taxes done. Like, you think about having to pull all of these different documents. Some of them are online. Some of them are mailed to you. Some of them you need to download. So we're talking about W-2s and 1099s and mortgage interest statements and receipts in some cases. 1099 INT forms if you're receiving interest from some of your investments, student loan, property, all of the above. And so if every single year you find yourself scrambling, my ask of you is to sort of try to imagine yourself or organize yourself the way a chef would, and build in some systems throughout the year. This could be as simple as having a folder. So instead of just receiving that mail and throwing it all off to the side, have a simple folder that you put those things in. Even if you're not opening it, it's fine. It's better than, let's say, not having a system at all. But I would take that a step further and create like a quarterly sort of placeholder, just a moment of, you know, every 3 months or 4 months, whatever works best for you, where you actually dig into those documents, you organize them, you label them accordingly, so that when it's time for tax season, it's as simple as sending that folder over or uploading it somewhere, and it's not nearly as stressful as it typically is.
Yes, I love that. I love the idea of mise en place, which is just basically sounds like having what you need where you need it before you get started.
I think it's translated to something to the effect of like, what you just said. I can't think of what it's called. I'm going to Google it real quick. Yeah.
But I also like shortening it to just Mies or Miesy.
Yeah, it's called Mies.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Or if you're feeling real fancy, it could be Mises.
Mises?
But seriously, it's a really small
thing.
Sounds like
an incurable sickness.
No, it sounds like a religious deity.
Got Mises. A bad case of the Mises.
but for real, it is a small thing that solves a big problem in finances, particularly, which is the cold start problem, which basically means you've got this big financial to-do list, and it's scattered all over your house in the form of a stack of bills on the countertop, something else stuck to the fridge. And it's really hard to know where to start. And so you just don't start. It's a complete cold start.
And you just accept it as a way of life. Like, taxes are always just going to be this
always gonna
annoying process. I wait until the last second. It's like, it doesn't have to be.
So then when you add on the digital reminders, which are emails, push notifications, it can all get very overwhelming. And that feeling of overwhelm is actually the thing that causes you to tap out of a new habit before it sticks, more than anything else, more than your circumstances, more than being busy, more than your personality type. It's those little moments of overwhelm. And so Mies is one of those things that can like help mitigate the moments of overwhelm because it's all in one area.
Yes.
So just to make it a little more practical, even beyond tax season, what are some easy ways that people can Miesify their finances?
No, that's not a word.
I would just keep trying. I'll just keep, you know, throwing them out there.
I'm going to go with the word that people know, organize. that word works perfectly fine, so we're going to stick with that. So taxes are just like one example, but I think this is relevant just for budgeting as well, because the same thing applies. I think one of the things that we've learned, we don't help a lot of couples, but like typically when we do, one of the things that we find is that they don't build in nearly enough time for both parties to actually dig into their stuff and collect all the documents that they need. And so they jump into your point with these perfectionist ideas that we're going to sit down and have a meeting on Sunday and have lunch, and then everything's going to be clear and we're going to be on the same page. And it's like, actually, you didn't factor in that you don't know half of the passwords that you need to actually pull the documents that you need. You've got 5 credit card accounts. This person has 2 accounts. They're waiting to hear back from that other person. And so there are all of these other things where you can't even get to a point of having a crystal clear point of view of what needs to be addressed because the documents and the files are all over the place. So I think some of the practical things that people can do, whether it's tax season or just in general budgeting, this little thing around organization, not Miesify, is opting in for paperless, right? So instead of having a combination of paper and non-paper, just keep it all. If you're going to go paper, then go paper. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go paperless, then go all paperless. That way you've got fewer places
to check
yeah. right? Just simplify your process. And even as I'm saying this, it really does convey very much to cooking, because that's one of the things that we convey to people. And I think we may have even mentioned that in a previous episode. The second thing is, if you're going to opt for paper, then find a home for it, right? Yep. So that may be that you've got a file folder, whether it's in your basement or your bedroom or your closet, depending on what your home looks like. And you may have it organized. I don't even think you really need to have it organized in terms of category, because most people's taxes aren't that complicated.
Right.
But you literally just need a simple folder. And I just put like a year on it, 2022. Yep. And that's where all the property taxes documents come in, the mortgage interest statements. And as you get them, you just file them in there. And again, you don't even have to open it.
Nope.
But like, you know what it is, you'll see what it is. Most importantly, if it says this is not a bill, right, it's okay. You don't have to go to the extent of opening it. But you're storing it somewhere so that when it's time to do your taxes, you've got one place to check, not five, not some that are online and some that are on paper. The other thing I would say is, if you want to stick with paper, but you want to kind of go with paper and then make it digital, because some companies actually will still send you something via paper. We just got one the other day and I was shocked by it. There's an app that you actually introduced me to, which I think is a part of Evernote, but it's called Scannable, mm-hmm. which is like my best friend, because I used to think that like we needed to have an actual scanner. And, you know, every now and then it comes in handy. But Scannable is a free app that you can use. You can take a picture just as you would if you were depositing a check. You can have that picture converted into a PDF and upload it into a folder or send it to yourself via email. It's really, really helpful. So just a quick little tip for those of you who are looking to solve some disorganization problems.
Yes. Notes also allows you to scan. The Notes app on your iPhone, if you're an iPhone user, also allows you to scan. And if you have a Dropbox account, you can scan through that.
Yep.
The only other thing I'd add to that, especially if there are any other recovering perfectionists like me who are listening and tend to think in all or nothing terms, is that you need to resist the urge to try to meet everything. In other yes. words, focus on one small subsection of your financial rituals. So maybe you just start with establishing a habit around where you put physical mail. And then once you've got a week and a half under your belt of doing that, then you move to your digital filing systems. And then once you've got that under your belt, then you start to organize your ongoing education and investments. But don't try to do everything at once.
Yeah.
Just baby step it and address things as they come up. Okay, so my small habit is actually related to yours, and it was actually inspired by this tweet that you wrote a while ago.
Okay.
I don't remember the exact wording, but it was something like 30% of adulting is simply remembering to do all the little stuff, something like that. Do you remember when you said that?
So I don't remember when I said it, but I remember what it felt like or what I was feeling when I did say it, or when I did tweet it. I don't tweet often. You are pretty much our chief tweet officer. But yeah, like adulting, like there was a, I don't know what I was feeling, but I think like it was that term adulting. Like I was just feeling it in that moment. And I think it was because I just had a laundry list of little things that I'd just been ignoring, from like changing out the air filters on the the furnace, doctor's appointments. There was some car maintenance. There were like due dates for things that were not monthly payments. I was getting emails, and I'm probably still getting them, to like update a PIN number. There was like a parent-teacher conference.
Change your password. It's been compromised.
Oh, my gosh. I think in that moment, I was like, because I had a primary to-do list, and I was like, I could literally just do all the literal things, and it would take me all day and probably spill into the next day. And again, going back to your point, like just of doing it all, like I just got overwhelmed by it, and I think that's why I said, you know what? I'm just going to tweet.
I'm going to tweet through
I'm not going to do any of it. I'm just going to tweet my frustration.
Which is basically what Twitter is.
Yeah, I was
not
like, you
doing
know what?
Anything about anything.
I'm tired of being an adult. I'm just going to get on Twitter.
Yeah, so that inspired my small but powerful habit, which is to write it down. Write everything down, y'all. And I know there are some eye rolls. Like, Sis's expert advice is to make a list. And the answer is yes.
It's profound.
That is my profound, powerful habit, is to write things down. And I won't deep dive into the neuroscience research, although if you've been listening to this podcast long enough, you know I am 100% down to go there. But there are some cognitive benefits to writing things down in that your brain remembers it differently. And it also helps with the cold start problem that we were talking about, similar to Mies.
Yes.
On top of that, as you move through your list and cross things off, it creates this sense of achievement, which sends all kinds of good hormones to your brain and increases the likelihood that you'll actually do it again. So writing things down has tremendous benefits, and those are just three of them, but there are a lot more. And I like this one because I'm naturally just a huge list person. I write on anything and everything, and I typically start with paper. Like if I have a piece of scrap paper or a sticky note, I'll write down something. But I do have this practice of taking what's on paper and then making it digital.
Yeah.
So I actually use a task app called Things on my phone and on my desktop, which is for Mac. And I dump literally everything that's in my head in there.
All the things?
All the things go in Things. And then I can organize it by category and priority. But the reason that I love it, as opposed to other task apps, is that it doesn't actually force me to put a due date, which is very helpful for my personality type. So I can lump tasks under today. These are the things that I absolutely want to do today. And then I can put the rest of them under anytime and someday. And I can add a deadline if I want to, but it doesn't require it. And then every day I'm basically waking up and scrolling through this long list of things that I said I want to do, which I typically filter by a priority and deadline. And then I just select the things that I actually want to do today. And so it still allows me to have this repository of tasks in one place without feeling like the list is never ending, because I'm never actually looking at all of it.
Yeah.
Like I'm filtering down to what did I say was high priority? What's going to take 15 minutes? You know, and I'm being productive based off my mood and energy levels.
Yeah. I'd love to have access to your list.
No.
I'd love to help you with that. Just make this a team exercise.
No, thanks.
Yeah, I have. I've always been a list person. I don't use any software. Like I have a super unsophisticated.
Yeah, I'm looking at like three of your lists on the table right now.
Yeah, I'm big on. Well, that's not a list. That's a workout plan.
That's a list. A list of workouts.
I mean, that's what I know what to do when I'm working out. But yeah, I like to write it down. That works for me. Every now and then, I also, you know, I'm pretty good at like managing my calendar. But I it's so weird. I keep things in draft. Like I will start an email and store my to-do list in my draft section of email. And then as I see it, it's like this, I don't know why, but it works for me. But it's my version of a list. And I also have, I think like most people, just notes on my phone, and I have that and I refer to it every now and then. But for the most part, I have my own version of list, but I don't use any of the fancy literal things or things app that you use.
Well, it was really to wean me from a habit, because I used to use my email as my task list. So that came from corporate, it came from the corporate habit of like my workload was determined based off of what was in my inbox. But that stopped working for me when I left that environment. And so I had to find something new.
Yeah.
Anyway, at the end of the day, a habit is just your brain running on autopilot.
Yes.
Or sometimes as it's referred to as like your unconscious mind. And in order to take your brain off of autopilot and put your conscious mind in the driver's seat, you really have to take some extra steps. So things like making lists and putting all the papers in one place and getting organized before you start something are just attempts to put your conscious mind back into the driver's seat.
Love it.
Driver's seat. Driver's sight could be a thing. We'll be right back with more small financial habits that lead to big impacts after this quick break. Okay, so my next tip probably isn't universally applicable, but for the listeners who have health savings accounts or any other specialized savings accounts, or maybe if you're a homeowner who has appliances under warranty, then it may be helpful. But it's to take pictures of your receipts.
Yep.
And this is very similar to what you were saying about tax prep. But it's such a small and annoying thing, but it makes things much easier on the back end if you ever need to file an insurance claim or maybe request reimbursement or even challenge a warranty. It's nice to have those photos on your phone or somewhere stored in a cloud. And you can throw away all of the paper that causes clutter and just adds to the feeling of overwhelm. Again, you don't need to make this overly complicated. You don't need to buy a scanner.
Right.
although they do sell tiny scanners that are perfect for things like receipts or business cards. But simply take a picture with your phone and then you can either stash them in a special folder within your photo album, or if you're feeling froggy, upload them to Google Drive or whatever cloud software you use and, you know, have them there all nice and filed away.
Yeah. You know what's interesting about that? Because I do that as well. I think what most people don't realize is that you're not going to see the benefit of that. You may not see the benefit of that for years.
Oh, yeah.
So it may just seem like really annoying. It's not until
you need
literally need it. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, no, I have it.
Yeah.
Like I've got
I know I got
ready to go. And another thing that I will tell you, quick pro tip, it's not necessarily financial, but it's really about just like removing the clutter, is in addition to saving those appliances, especially if you're talking about things like saving receipts for things like appliances, is you don't actually have to save the instruction manuals. Like you can things out. You can Google it and download a soft copy and you can store that literally right next to the receipt. So you know when you bought your, just making it up, your fancy kitchen gadget or your refrigerator, you don't have to save that thick document. Like you can just throw that stuff away.
Yep.
So yeah, there's your quick organizational / financial pro tip. I want to move on to, is this number three? The next habit.
This is four.
This is number four. Okay. This is my favorite one. Because I think it's something that I think it's so widely ignored, but it is to revisit your insurance. And I will say, I hate the term guru, but I will say as someone who was in the personal finance space, this is something that I in part attribute to us, because I don't think we spend nearly as much time talking about the cost of insurance, but certainly like just like how to approach it. And that's for a variety of reasons. But I do know that we obsess and we tend to spend a lot of time focusing on the big three. But I would argue that for a lot of people, that fourth one is likely going to be insurance.
Oh, 100%.
So if we're talking about medical, vision, dental, prescriptions, like premiums, like it's super complex to understand, which I think contributes to why a lot of people don't dig into it.
And because it's mandatory.
It's mandatory. It's so easy to just leave it on auto payment because it may be tied to an employer. It's one of those things that people are just reluctant to change because there's also a bit of a relationship that you may have, especially if we're talking about a medical care provider. There's a feeling that to change is to disrupt my entire life and I don't feel like filling out 5011 forms again. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things that I think oftentimes gets overlooked. But if you're looking to create a really, really impactful habit that I think might only cost you half a day in the grand scheme of things, is to spend a, let's say, 2-3 hours in one of, I'll just pick a month, whatever is best for you. For me, it used to be June, and I used to literally enjoy it. I would just crack open my laptop, and I would comb through my insurance and see what else is out there. So little things like, how much are you paying for auto insurance? What could you be paying? Revisit that website, log in, see what else is out there, get some quotes from other people, see how much they might be willing to offer you in savings if you were to jump ship from one company to another, or just calling up your current provider and seeing if there are any existing discounts or adjustments that you could be making to your policies that could be saving you some money. Like it, for me, used to feel like finding a couple $100s in your pocket like every single year, and then you could use that for like vacation, which come to think of it may have been why I chose the summer. Because it was like, all right, I'm planning this vacation. Let me see if I can offset the cost of this flight. And more often than not,
you can.
Like you just go back there and it's like, oh, well, actually, you've been with us for another year. You've been with us for 2 years. And you can save this much or that much. Or you
can just lower your coverage, right?
You
it doesn't even have to be something prompted by the insurance company.
Yep.
A good rule of thumb is to only insure what you can't afford to replace. And so as you're making progress on your financial goals, you might say that I can take a higher deductible on my car insurance.
Correct.
And while right now my quote is based off of only having a $500 deductible, I can actually handle a $1,500 deductible, and that lowers your rate, right?
Yes.
So it's just a matter of of looking at all of your different options for coverage and for provider.
And I think one of the things that we, and one of the other reasons why we tend to overlook this is because it's especially when we start to earn more money. When yes. you're earning more money, you tend to look at things like insurance as more affordable
right.
because you've earned more money, but you don't really think about how you might be able to optimize your overall income or maximize your net income by still continuing to push, right? It's like, it's a psychological effect there. Like you're making more money, you just kind of see like, oh, I can afford to do these things now, or insurance doesn't eat up as much as my, as much of the share of my income anymore. And so you start to ignore it. But I would encourage you to spend a couple hours every single year. You don't have to obsess about it,
right.
but dig into it, ask for some new quotes, call up your providers, see what they can do to bring that number down, because I'm telling you, you're likely leaving a lot of money on the table.
Yeah, I agree that people hate doing this because they assume that it's going to be a ton of paperwork and effort, but it's really not that anymore. No. I actually just went through this with your mom right now. She's had a lot of life transitions in the last few years. She's retired. She's no longer a homeowner. She's not driving nearly as much due to the location of yep. her new apartment. But she still has the same coverage on her car as she did when she was commuting every single day.
Right.
And so when I was doing some research for her, I was able to take her date of birth and a couple of pieces of personal information. And once I input it, several of the sites already knew what her car make and model was, already knew how many miles she drove yep. because of the API and data connections that have come as a result of innovation. And I got accurate quotes within minutes. And on sites like Policy Genius, I was actually able to get several quotes and just compare them very quickly. I thought I was going to need to get on the phone,
yeah.
but there were actually a few sites and prompts that were saying like, please stay digital. This is the lowest rate you're going to get. Like, please don't call me because it might actually increase your cost. So if yeah. they want you to be able to look online, which is a fairly new phenomenon. You used to have to like talk to an agent.
Yeah.
And now it's not that anymore.
Yeah. I've had similar experiences with service providers, but because insurance occupies such a larger percentage of people's income, I think the feeling or the ROI of making those calls or just jumping online real quick and trying to see what other opportunities are out there, I found that you get much more bang for your buck. So I would strongly encourage that everyone sort of take the time to kind of dive into what they're paying for insurance and find some opportunities for saving. I think it's particularly important in what we're in right now, this hyper-competitive and hyper-inflationary market. So I would say that like building that habit into your annual planning is so, so important. The last thing I'll say is something else to consider that I think is important to this point, which is to look at the percentage of your income that you're spending on protecting depreciating assets mm-hmm. compared to, let's say, your savings rate. So I'm just making it up. Let's say you find that 5% of your net income is going towards savings, right? But a comparable amount, or even worse, a greater percentage of your income is going towards things like car insurance or renter's insurance mm-hmm. or jewelry insurance or any other type of insurance that's there to protect things that aren't necessarily
life insurance.
Life insurance,
not saying you don't need life insurance,
right.
but assuming you have an investment, you're leaving people with a death benefit anyway, like in the form of beneficiaries.
Yeah, there's insurance, and then there's like this kind of subcategory of insurance that is typically there for things that go towards depreciating assets, right?
Yeah.
Things like car insurance. I always find that like there's no real metric for that. That's not
no.
a financial term, but I think that's the business mindset for me, where it's like, all right, I am putting 5% of my net income towards saving for the future, but I'm spending a comparable amount just to protect the cash or assets that are literally declining in value or may not even have any real like market value at all. And I think that's a huge indicator. If after doing that math, you find that you have an opportunity to actually be saving more. Like that's like the equivalent of like burning money in a fireplace to stay warm.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's like, you're right. You do need to stay warm, but like cash is probably not
right. the
best
to burn.
Fuel that you yeah. want to be using. And I think a lot of people are doing that. We sort of check the box and pat ourselves on the back for being insured, but we don't really think about what we're actually insuring or the details of what we're insuring. And the cost of that relative to what we could be doing or investing or saving or doing things that actually add more value.
Yeah. And how much insurance is double dipping. Like you have travel insurance on top of American Express's insurance, on top of your health insurance, on top of like, you know, you could be very quickly overinsured.
Yeah.
But going back to the episode we did a few weeks ago on tech and finances, there's actually been a lot of innovation in the way that insurers are writing their policies now. So if you're one of those people that haven't revisited it in 5, 6, 8 years, this next little section is for you. On the auto insurance side, companies are more willing to give you a discount on premiums if you're willing to let them ride shotgun. So in other words, if you're willing to install a monitoring device, which sounds very Big Brother, but it's not as creepy as it sounds. But if you're willing to install a monitoring device on your car in exchange for giving them real-time information about your driving habits, they're willing to give you a break on the premium if you're a safe driver.
Yes.
So this concept is called usage-based insurance. And I know that Allstate and State Farm both offer this option, but there are also others like Metro Mile that you can investigate. It's free to use and often results in discounts for users, which can be significant as long as you're careful. But it's another trend that's been accelerated by the pandemic. According to a J.D. Power survey, interest in this type of monitoring increased by 30% in 2020. And companies like Nationwide predict that in a few years, 70% or more of their new business will come from people who are interested in this type of program. They don't want blanket insurance. They only want insurance that's based off of how they drive. And there's also a benefit for people who don't drive much, like your mom, because the devices aren't just tracking, you know, if you brake too hard or if you accelerate really quickly. They're also tracking how far you go and a number of other metrics, just like your smartphone does.
Right.
And so for those of us who work from home and are driving a lot less, opting into these types of devices can make your pricing more fair because your driving behavior indicates that you're less of a risk than someone who's on the road all the time.
Yeah.
And most insurance companies have a deal where if you drive 7,500 miles or less, you actually get a discount on the premium. So there's lots of good incentives to at least look on the auto insurance side.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, some of the other places that might be a little scarier.
Yeah, I have two final thoughts with respect to insurance. One is thinking back to, I don't even remember when I bought my car. Was that last year or the year before?
Last year.
One of the things I was like cringing, I was like, oh gosh, I don't know what impact this is going to have on my auto insurance. And I was actually surprised. And so I upgraded my super frugal dude, right? So I upgraded, what was that, an 06 or 08 Honda Accord for like a 2018 or whatever it is. But it's a newer version. And I totally expected like my actual auto insurance policy to increase dramatically. And it actually went down. Right. And I was shocked by that. But then when I inquired about it, it was like, oh, well, it was because this newer vehicle actually has far more features in it and safety features and all of these other things that your old vehicle didn't have. And so it's actually less to insure. And I was really shocked by that. So that might be the case for you. It might be another reason. Well, you would have likely already experienced that if you got a new car, but just something to be mindful of if you are in the market for a new car. And the other thing I would say is, and again, going back to why insurance is such an interesting topic, I think a lot of us have been led to believe that loyalty like has value, right? Yes. And this may be because insurers communicate that to you, like, oh, thank you for being with us for 3 years. But like, if you've been with them for 3 years, 4 or 5 years, and you've not checked all your policy, you're not really taking advantage of your loyalty.
Like you are funding everybody else's accidents.
Correct. And they're certainly, while they're grateful for your loyalty, they're certainly not going to say, hey, you could be paying us less.
Right.
They're not going to do that. Right. And if they do that, they're really doing it for one thing, but they're not incentivized to do that. You have to take it upon yourself to explore what other incentives you would be available for. Otherwise, like my mom, your entire lifestyle could be changing. You will have gone multiples of years, but you're still sort of paying a quote based off of your prior usage or prior situation.
Yes. So there you have it. 4 habits that can lead to big changes. They are mise en place, misify your stuff. Write it down. Bonus points if you add it to a calendar or a task app. 3, take pictures of your receipt, then file them and throw them away. And then 4, shop around for insurance. If you go shop for insurance.
Shop around. I love it. All right. Was that your final thoughts, or was that
no? So I
next
wanted
to final.
Okay, so for my final thought, I wanted to make my final thought about flossing because because flossing is one of those habits that people know they should do but don't. And I was researching why that is, and I found this crazy anecdotal story. I don't know if it's true or not, but they said that America's brushing habits weren't changed until there was this toothpaste advertising campaign that told people to run their tongue across their teeth. And if they felt that dingy film, like that's what their toothpaste would actually get rid of. They positioned their toothpaste as the solution for that dingy film on people's teeth. And it was successful because there was a simple and obvious cue, like run your tongue across your teeth. And then there was a clearly defined reward, which is like the film is gone, right? So I was reading that, and then they made the point that flossing, there isn't that same level of instant gratification. And so that's why people don't do it. They don't get the same reward as they do with brushing. And so people brush more than they floss. Anyway, my final thought is to make sure that you floss.
Thank
one.
You.
Brush and floss. My final thought is to make sure that you create that instant gratification and reward for yourself. So once you commit to writing things down, for example, maybe get you a really nice pen, one of those gel pens that glides, and some good stationery to get the instant reward of like writing something down.
Yeah.
Or if you find some insurance savings, maybe go ahead and redirect that money somewhere else, like a vacation, like you mentioned, or something else that you want or like, but build in the reward with your habit. Don't try to just do the habit cold.
I like that. I like that. I will also say you are not alone if while she was speaking, you
rubbed
used your tongue
yes.
and rubbed it across. It was like, oh my gosh, do I have a nasty film? Yes, you're not alone. My final thought is call it what you want. If you're like me, you don't like the term routine. I'm sorry, habits, that's fine. Call it routines. You can call it best practices, daily tactics, whatever
hacks.
You want. Hacks. It doesn't really matter. I think the goal is to be willing to do something that may be unpleasant or uncomfortable to the point where it's so deeply ingrained that you don't even think about it anymore, but it generates positive results. Whatever you want to call, do that, whether it's brushing, flossing, you know. I even heard, you want to talk about fun, useless facts. I've once heard that if you just didn't happen to have a toothbrush or toothpaste, you could actually chew on a piece of celery. And because it's so fibrous, it could give you some type of comparable feeling to
what?
Actually brushing your teeth.
That is
so
not true.
That
Learn
is
that
true.
On TikTok.
Probably.
Yeah, that feels like a TikTok fact.
Google it. Anyway, do that.
All right. Please brush your teeth. Do not sub for celery.
Celery is good enough.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. A really good habit that you can start right now is that when you like something, share it and review it. So head on over. I was funny early in the episode. And I ran out of steam. So just head on over and leave us a 5-star rating and review, y'all.
Please.
We'll see you next week.